show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got some baseball stuffs happening. The winter meetings hasn't been jam-packed with wall-to-wall happenings and things going on, but there's been enough to kind of whet the appetite, if you will, and we'll get to that here in a second. But first, I am Jeff Hur, and with me, as always, is the man who is constantly wall-to-wall action himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this this cold, wintry, not fun evening? Not fun in terms of weather.
I'm all right. I'm just kind of waiting for something to happen. It's probably going to happen. It's not going to happen while we're recording. It's going to happen literally as soon as we sign off.
We're going to get some huge news.
Yeah, something's going to happen.
But some huge news, like the news that we've already heard. So I don't know which of these two stories is bigger, honestly. So the first one that really hit was the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes, if you will, ended, and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim of Angels of Los Angeles in California were the winners. So there was all the talk about Ohtani wanting to go to the West Coast, and he had already spurned, as of last week when we were talking about it, he had already spurned the Yankees and the Red Sox, etc. He ended up going to the Angels, and now, you know, the Angels are, with a couple more moves, you know, it would get expensive, but with a couple more moves, the Angels could be looking at having a really good shot at in the AL next year. So we'll see. That was a big splash there. And then the next one, of course, followed up with was the Giancarlo Stanton trade going from the apparently now rebuilding Miami Marlins to the New York Yankees. So the old man, the Yankees get everyone. That it's true in this case. So, and it's an interesting story behind that one, a little bit more interesting than the Ohtani situation, because so apparently Stanton has a no-trade clause to a few teams, one of them being the St. Louis Cardinals. I'll leave that where it is. And then the Marlins wanted to trade him to one of the teams. I'm not sure which.
I think they had a deal with the Cardinals.
Was it with the Cardinals? Okay. Because there was another team. Who was the other team?
The other team was the Giants.
Giants, yes.
Yeah.
And so they essentially threatened him and said, if you don't waive your no-trade clause to one of these two teams, then we're going to keep you on this team, and we're going to sell off all the rest of the pieces, and you're just going to be a really good player on a really bad team. So Stanton called their bluff, thinking they wouldn't actually do that because it doesn't make sense if they really want to rebuild to keep your best piece.
Also, he had an opt-out in his contract.
There's also that small piece.
Silly Marlins.
So you call it silly Marlins. So that you can change the owner, but you can't change the team, right?
God, really?
So
right?
You can take the owner out of the team, but you can't take the team, whatever. You know what I mean?
The spirit of Jeffrey Loria lives on.
Exactly. That's what I'm getting at. So Stanton called their bluff, and they folded, and they ended up trading him to the New York Yankees. So now the New York Yankees have Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge on the same team at the same time. So
yeah,
they're going to hit a lot of home runs next year.
Uh-huh.
And that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
That's that was kind of an interesting little development to see the way that that was going, and how that all unfolded. And I mean, the Marlins just, they just can't get out of the, they're just a mess. They've won two, you know, the Marlins have had arguably the worst owner in baseball history for most of their, I guess not most. When did he got it from?
I feel like he got it in like 96 or something. Laurie was
that early?
Yeah, Laurie was with the Expos and he left somewhere in there.
That's right. I knew he had that, but I thought, because wasn't there that Wayne Huizenga, he owned them, didn't he?
Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm. Maybe my timeline is way off. Maybe Huizenga had him in that, in the 97 sell-off.
Okay, I'm looking it up now. Let's see. Wayne Huizenga, sports team ownership. He also bought the Kayla Sports. Oh, no, that's Florida. Let's see. He presided over the single worst defense in MLB World Championship history, dismantling the 97 champion Marlins. So he owned the team in 97 at least.
Okay.
That
poor franchise.
At the end of the 98 season, Huizenga sold the Marlins to John Henry.
Oh, okay.
Is what it says here.
So then Loria probably bought him around, what, 2006-ish?
So now let's look up.
2005-ish?
Let's see. Florida, okay.
So they go from, they win a World Series and they sell everybody off. And then they sell to a new owner. And then another new owner down the line. They win a championship and they sell off.
Yes.
Gross.
God. Okay, so he bought them in 2002. So you had Wayne Huizenga, and then they win the World Series in 97, like you said. Completely dismantle. Sell the team. And then it gets sold again in 2002, somehow this whole time, they've been able to develop a top-tier farm system, have a really good team, win the 2003 World Series, and they completely dismantle again. And I remember looking at it at the time, in 2009, I was like, well, because I always find it interesting, I like to see if there's any sort of pattern to somehow, you know, even if it's just pure coincidence, you know, like the Spurs, how they won the title in the odd years, you know, and then you had, you know, whatever the case may be. So it was every 6 years, you know, 97, 2003, and I was like, okay. And that actually seems somewhat reasonable if you were to literally tear the whole thing down and rebuild it. And then 2009, they were good. But they just didn't make the World Series. That was when they had Josh Johnson and all those guys. They were still good, but then they didn't end up making the World Series. So that, you know, that's gone. And then it would have been 2015 would have been their year, but we all know what happened then.
Yeah.
Had they kept it going at the time. But point being, isn't it crazy? They had all this turmoil in ownership. They had one of the worst owners ever. They've literally had their owners demand to completely sell off the team after World Championships, and they won two World Championships in that time period.
It's not even fair.
And, I mean, the
really.
Royals, won one, and I guess almost, I mean, it seems a lot worse, but at the time before, you know, as of 2013, you're looking at a team like the Marlins who hadn't even existed as long as the Royals had not made the playoffs at that time, and they'd won two titles. So
I remember we even talked about that somewhere in, yeah, like in that time period where we were asking, well, would you rather just do that full reset if it meant that you definitely had a championship versus, you know, maybe kind of being in it a little bit every year and maybe slogging through. And I don't know if we ever really got a consensus on that because it was you, me, and Troy.
I
never really want to go through that type of rebuild, especially immediately after a championship.
Right.
But I guess, I mean, you can't fault the – I guess it worked.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is we were just that was back when we were talking about development. So not only was it the decision to rebuild, but how are you going to rebuild? Mm-hmm. And kind of trying to see, like, okay, what was it that these teams – because you had – I mean, Marlins and Rockies came in and was it 94, right?
93.
Yep. And then – so the Marlins won in 97 and 03. The Rockies made it in – was it 07 or 08 they made the World Series?
That was – oh,
they had that huge streak to end the season. 07? I think it was 07.
Yeah.
So you had them in 07. The Diamondbacks and the Rays came in 98. Diamondbacks won the whole thing in 2001. Rays made the World Series in 2008. And, you know, other playoff appearances for a lot of those other teams in between. And all that time, the Royals were just toiling away in in obscurity. What was the difference? You know, what was how did it happen for them but not for the Royals? But it's kind of put them in an interesting conundrum because, you know, and we even talked about it, like, after the glee had subsided in 2015, you know, we didn't seriously say, oh, this is what the not the same as what they could have gotten. You know, after 2015, what could they have gotten for Eric Hosmer or Moustakas or, you know, Danny Duffy at the time, or Yordano Ventura had they decided to trade him at that time, or Salvador Perez? You know, I mean, they had all these players and they had huge names and all this success, and they were on the, you know, in the front of everyone's minds. Excuse me. So it's an interesting question to ponder. When you look at, you know, how teams and dynasties and all that kind of stuff are built and what the – it brings into question what's the smart decision or what's the best decision versus, you know, the head versus heart argument. You know, what's the actual smart versus what do they actually want to do? What should they do? That type of a thing. So and that's got some particular relevance to – some recent news, but we'll get to that here in a minute. First, we'll talk about kind of Royals, the free agency. You know, we've been talking about it all offseason. There's been very little movement in terms of the Royals free agents. However, there has been some news this week concerning Eric Hosmer. So it came out, you know, that the Royals were courting Eric Hosmer very hard, like, duh. You know, we all know that. And then the first kind of bit of news of a non-Royals team after him was you know, we had all speculated about different teams that we thought would be in the market and that would be good fits for him. But the San Diego Padres came up as a name, and they've been talking with him, or more likely with Scott Boras, about signing him. And it seems kind of odd. we were talking about it in the Slack chat, and Clint Scholes, I believe, was asking a question of just why would the Padres be interested in such a thing? And the last time the Padres made a move that made sense would be the first time. I don't recall that actually made a lot of sense for them. So I don't know, but that's kind of the rumors heating. And they kind of escalated a little bit and they died off, and then they came out that the Royals were pessimistic about their about whether or not they'll be able to re-sign Eric Hosmer, and who knows what's going to happen and all this kind of stuff. So I don't know where the Royals are. I don't know where the Padres are. But, I mean, were you kind of scratching your head like I was when you heard the Padres were interested? They have all the teams that we have talked about. That's one that
– yeah.
I mean, you know, I think in the back of your mind, the Padres is like, okay – if they jump in, it never truly shocks you because they're the Padres. But at the same time, you didn't think they would, or at least I didn't.
Yeah, it's weird. The one thing is that Eric Hosmer is 28 years old, so I mean he's in that kind of age where if they've got three more years ahead of them in a rebuild, you know, at least in the second half of that contract, he'll still be in his early 30s, and you know would end up with the potential to still have some peak seasons left, and if he's doing that as the rest of the team is coming up and hitting their stride, that's a pretty good piece to have. But it's really tough to justify, like, 3 big years ahead of that as you work towards that. But I don't know. The only thing I can kind of think of is it kind of struck me a little bit as if, you know, kind of like Ivan Rodriguez when he signed with the Tigers back in, when was that, 2004 or maybe a little later than that, where it didn't really make a lot of sense because they were really, they were coming off some historically bad seasons. But he did end up being one of those pieces that really started their return to relevance and contention. And so, I mean, maybe that's kind of what they're thinking. But the other thing about it with the Padres is they already have Will Myers at first, who they explicitly moved to first because outfield wasn't working out. Now he says he would move back to the outfield, but I don't know if that's the best idea for him. So I don't know how it makes sense there. Unless they just want to make a move or they feel like they're closer than most everybody else thinks that they are. But they were definitely surprised. I mean, I figured Boston would be the most relevant team when you're talking about Hosmer, along with the Royals. But I guess when the Padres are getting in there too, there's, you know, it's a good day for Scott Boras, but it doesn't mean it makes any sense to me.
Yeah, it's perplexing. The Will Myers thing is really the final kicker of, like, what is going on here?
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense.
They did go, the Padres did go and trade for Chase Headley. So, I mean, maybe they're trying to put those pieces together now, and I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. But
I never know. Does anyone?
They probably don't either. They're probably, yeah. Oh, we got Headley? When did that happen?
Hey, we got this guy now, I guess. So, yeah. So there's that. So that's kind of that's been the biggest piece of the Hosmer news. The rest has remained quiet. I haven't really heard of any official news or even official rumors of other teams that have been interested.
Yeah, not a whole lot, but there's a lot of first basemen out there, and JD Martinez is still available. So until he goes, I don't know if, like, the big hitter contracts are going to go anywhere. Carlos Santana is out there as an alternative. We talked about the first base alternatives last week. So, I mean, I think a lot of teams are just kind of taking their time and waiting things out, which that's totally fair. The Royals think that'll probably work to their advantage. Maybe it will. One move that just kind of, I guess, came official is Ian Kinsler got traded to the Angels. So that's a nice piece to add with Ohtani. Yeah. It looks like they're going to actually go do something. And they're on the verge of acquiring a third baseman, according to Bob Nightingale. So that's the Angels. Mike Moustakas was the guy who was talking to the Angels, and he grew up like an hour from the stadium. So who knows if, you know, that's who they're going to get or if they're going to trade for someone. I don't know. So interesting. Interesting.
Yes, very much so. And then there's talks of the Cardinals possibly trading Dexter Fowler.
And maybe so, they just get Marcell Ozuna. So, you know, they do have a lot of outfielders, and they traded Stephen Piscotty earlier today, but they already have Tommy Pham out there and, you know, plenty of talent, so. Yeah, they could move Fowler.
And, you know, depending on who the team is that goes after him and what their situation is, that could depress the Lorenzo Cain market. Because if somebody's trading for a Dexter Fowler, then that's less room for Lorenzo Cain on that roster. And it's somebody who's probably in the market for that. So, for that position. So it's, you know, not a ton of direct news, but a lot of little pieces that, if you put them all together, starts to shape the picture up a little bit. You know, it seems like we kind of thought that the easiest, or I don't know if say easiest, but the most prominent deal that would be the first to get done would probably be Eric Hosmer, but you know, if the Angels want to get moving on this stuff and they are in the market for a third baseman and they're ready to get out ahead of this thing, then you know, they can just go snatch up Mike Moustakas. I'm sure he would love to play in LA, be close to home. I mean, that seems like we talked about that. I mean, we've talked about that for a long time as what would be a likely good fit. So yeah,
it's kind of been the assumed landing spot for a mm-hmm. while, really.
Yeah.
You know, if the Royals didn't bring him back, that's the most likely place he would go. Maybe New York now, but yeah, no, those guys have signed. The Giants have been talking to the Reds about Billy Hamilton, so that could be another market for Kane that dries up. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird how specifically the Royals guys are in weird markets where, you know, not a lot of teams really need a third baseman. So Moustakas is kind of wandering, and there's a lot of first basemen. So Hosmer's kind of floating out there, and there's a lot of center fielders. So Kane's floating out there, too. And I haven't heard anything from anybody about Alcides Escobar. So
no.
Lord knows where he's going to end up. He's probably going to end up back, sadly. I mean,
jeez.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I don't know. Geez. But waiting for that first domino to tip over, and, you know, that's probably going to be where a lot of things start to happen. It's just been, I don't know, unusually quiet. I mean, it's not that every transaction happens over the winter meetings, but it's definitely a lot of them happen. So this year is pretty much an anomaly in that sense. But
yes,
I don't know. Maybe teams are just waiting things out because they know that they can. You know, it wouldn't surprise me to you know, see a team take a couple extra weeks just to kind of sort some of that stuff out, just because they think that maybe one guy gets antsy. Like, if you're perfectly fine with Logan Morrison or Yonder Alonso or Mitch Moreland as your first baseman, and you have, you know, soft offers to any of those three, and someone comes back and says, yeah, we'll go for that. Well, now you got your guy, and you don't have to get somebody that you might have spent more on. So maybe that's the game. I don't know. It's slow, and it's honestly a little bit boring. So there's just not a lot
so far it has
happening.
Been, yeah.
I mean, this Kinsler deal is significant. Ozuna, that was a pretty big deal.
Yep.
Stanton obviously was a big deal, and Ohtani. But, I mean, that's kind of it. We kind of knew that Stanton was going to get traded. You knew Ohtani was going to pick somebody. It was pretty certain once Stanton was traded that the other guys are probably going to get dealt. And Kinsler definitely doesn't have any use on the Tigers because they're not going to be any good. So, you know, kind of waiting for that one surprise to come through, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, just some real blockbusters. Seems like there's always one every year, but yeah, it just hasn't really come to fruition yet. So hopefully that comes soon, because it's been kind of boring this offseason so far.
Yeah.
But anyway, so some other, let's see. Other news. As far as the Royals' interest in other players in free agency, so we've heard some kind of interesting nuggets, if you will. Nothing serious, nothing to get up in arms about yet, but there has been interest in Carlos Gonzalez for the Royals, and I guess we'll start there. He's probably the most prominent name, and he would definitely be a name that people would recognize as someone who, you know, has had some very good seasons. But it seems kind of odd, you know, where Carlos Gonzalez is at in his career, bad injury history, getting older, not as good as he once was, and, you know, not to say that he's, you know, not still a good player, you know, could be, but he seems more like a piece that, like, okay, you've got that one small piece, you know, let's bring him on board and see if he could help, you know, like when the Royals picked up Miguel Tejada, or, you know, and I mean that excuse me, that obviously ended poorly, but, you know, that was at least their logic behind why they pick up a player like him, or Raul Ibanez in 2014 or something, you know, and Carlos Gonzalez has more left in the tank than Raul Ibanez at this point, but that's kind of the logic that you would go for if you're going to get a player like Carlos Gonzalez. So it just goes to show that where the Royals are in this weird kind of, you know, we talked about at the top of the show, are we rebuilding? Are we trying to stay competitive? You know, what are we doing? And kind of heard conflicting reports, you know, through most of the offseason, it's been that the Royals are intending to, you know, still spend some money and have a remain competitive and be viable. And then the last week or so, maybe a little bit more, it's kind of started to float around the idea that maybe the Royals want to just start a rebuild and go from there. And it almost seems like the market will dictate to the Royals what it's going to be. You know, if there are some free agents that they can re-sign Hosmer, because his market gets depressed enough, and then they can sign some players, maybe like a Carlos Gonzalez or somebody else, you know, who can come in and help the team, kind of maybe, you know, fill in some of the gaps, then maybe they can still be competitive. Or maybe, you know, they're priced out of all these players, and maybe there are some trades they can look at that can rebuild, you know, they can help rebuild towards the future. So they're in kind of that weird position, but for me, the Carlos Gonzalez thing was kind of another head scratcher. Just like, it just doesn't seem like the right fit right now for this Royals team.
No, I think, I mean, he had a rough year last year, but he had a better second half. But I think he's got more in the tank than, you know, say, well, like, I would kind of compare him more to like last year's Austin Jackson deal in Cleveland, where a guy with a lot of success, and you kind of bring him on to see if maybe he can recapture any part of that. And, you know, Gonzalez used to be, you know, a 30-30 type of guy. I mean, granted, playing in Coors, but still legit producer at the plate, played center field and everything else. So he's not that anymore, but I think he could still be a 20-homer guy. He could still be effective, but there are enough questions there and enough cheaper, better alternatives that I'm kind of surprised they're looking at him. I don't know that they're that serious. I think the main thing that I saw regarding Gonzalez was that, like, there were about 10 teams that were kind of keeping an eye on him, and they were mentioned. But I would say they're probably not in the top half of those teams. It's mostly that they have a need for a center fielder, and he happens to play center field, and they would be interested, but I don't know if they're going to pursue him that much. But at this point, the Royals haven't really been linked to a lot of players. They've been, you know, they've been linked to Willy Peralta because they signed him.
Yeah,
that's it. They signed Scott Barlow out of the Dodgers minor leagues and gave him a major league contract, and he's never pitched in the majors, but let's see. Let's find out. So that's kind of what they've been doing to this point. You know, they're biding their time. They're saying that they don't want to payroll above 110, 120. Well, that's kind of tough because they're projected basically at about 119 right now. So, you know, bringing on anybody is going to be difficult. So I don't know. I don't know what they're really doing. They seem to be, maybe it is like you said, they're just kind of seeing what the market does and taking their cue from that. And if they can get some of those guys cheap, or they can make some kind of a deal where they trade salary and get someone who maybe has 4 years of team control that might produce, you know, kind of like with Soler and Nate Karns last year, maybe that's how they try to fill out and plug those gaps. But I don't know. I mean, it seems more and more like they're going to be shifting towards a true rebuild versus trying to, you know, go halvesies on contending, but also getting guys with some team control down the line. You know, it's kind of like the Ron Swanson quote, don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. And I don't think they're in a position to whole-ass contention. So if they're going to choose a direction and actually stick to it, it's probably going to be a rebuild, which is really sad, actually, when you think about it, because we kind of just got past the glow of the World Series and actually being relevant for a change, and it's like, I'm not ready to start it over again. But, you know, that may be the most intelligent thing that they can do, just because And you look at the Angels. The Angels have gotten significantly better just in the last week. The Yankees have gotten significantly better in the last week. The Red Sox are still good. The Rangers are good. The Mariners are always going to be kind of in there. The Astros are obviously good. The Rays are all right. The Orioles are kind of okay. The Twins and the Indians and, you know, so the Royals might be in, like, the bottom third of the American League right now. And there's not a lot of room for them to push up above that. You know, there's not a lot of moves that they can make that make sense. You know, I mean, they could technically sign Yu Darvish and others, but they're not going to. So, you know, what moves do they have that push them into that, like, top six that put them into a theoretical wild card spot? I don't know what they are. And if that's the case, when you consider their farm system is like a bottom third and maybe even bottom five, and not their best players aren't really that close to the big leagues, it's tipping to me that they're going to start, you know, looking at ways to try to reload that farm system. And Dayton Moore has said things to that effect. So it might get a little shaky here in the next few weeks as the Royals kind of evaluate where they're at and what they're going to do. So, you know, nothing yet has happened, and they haven't really firmly come out and said a lot, but that sure seems to be what they're looking at to me.
Yeah, and, you know, it would definitely feel weird because, like you said, you know, we're still coming down from that championship high, but I think it would feel a little bit different this time if for no other reason than they actually did it. You know what I mean? Like, how many, oh, they're rebuilding again, Royals are rebuilding again, and every time they, in the, you know, 90s all the way through the 2000s, it was, you know, they'd have a year where they'd win like 75 games, it's like, oh, okay, they're getting ready, and then they'd lose 100 games the next year, and it's like, okay, well, we'll just scrap it, just rebuild everything, you know, and there was never a clear direction, and it's that, like, the whole don't half-ass two things, that type of a thing. I mean, it's so true, if not for, I mean, you're not going to make the playoffs, and you're not really building towards the future because you're not really stocking your farm system because you're not making any trades or anything. So you're hoping, essentially, that you are the same team that you were the last 2 years, and that's enough to satisfy the fans in order to keep them coming out to the ballpark and spending money. I don't know if that's the right way to build it. You know, it sucks because you don't want to be, you know, we've been the team that's been absolute laughingstock of baseball, where we've been the fans of a team that have been, and then, you know, you've seen other teams go through it, and they've been able to turn around much quicker. I mean, talking about like the Astros and the Tigers and, you know, teams like that. So, you know, it's not, it would feel maybe a tad different this time because you could say, okay, they did it before. They know how it needs to be done. They have a more clear direction. They know at least something that works. Hopefully they can evolve it a little bit, you know, as everything needs to evolve, of course. But
they have a better infrastructure.
Exactly.
They don't have to build a Latin program from scratch, basically.
Yeah, and they
they have Chinese in the system.
Yeah, they have a championship pedigree in place. They've been there. They know, you know, what to do, when to do it, those types of things. So it would take on a little bit of a different face to it, if you will. But, yeah, it seems like they're headed that way. And I think the Royals, we know. You know, the fans know, and I think the front office knows. I think pretty much everybody knows that given the Royals' nature or the Royals' small market team, their desires with payroll and where they want to keep the payroll, the smart thing to do and what they should do is rebuild. That would be the business decision, if you will. But the flip side of that is they spend all this time getting so, you know, winning a championship, getting so much goodwill from the fans. Would it feel like a betrayal to the fans right now to trade off some of the pieces that they currently have and say, you know, we know this window is closed, it's tough, but we're gonna try and start from the ground up because that's the smartest thing to do. You know, And we've kind of talked over the past years about, you know, Billy Beane and his style with the A's, and they've kind of gone through this process a few times, but he tries to keep things almost like it's in a spreadsheet form because it's easier to make these decisions. You know, you should make. Dayton Moore is the antithesis of that. He's very, very personal, very much about the player, very much about the right fits for the organization, you know, all those types of things. So it's not something that's easy for him, or that's something that I would imagine would be easy for him to turn around and say, you know, all these players that helped us get to where we are, where we were to get these championships, we're going to just trade them off because this is what has to be done. It's a smart thing to do, you know, and I think he knows it, but he's holding off as long as he can because it's got to be tough for him. And we've kind of seen him do similar things before when it comes to trading players or that type of thing. So it's got to be tough. And I don't know what will end up happening, but it feels like they're leaning closer towards the realization that they're going to have to rebuild. And part of that, that we know, we'll just kind of jump right into this, but part of why I think you and I are both thinking that that's where they're going to go is because shortly before we started recording, some interesting news started coming out. So we've been talking about how they've kind of shifted focus couple of times in the offseason, and recently it's been from the rumor mill media standpoint that the Royals are, they're open for business, if you will. Everybody's on the table, and they're possibly thinking that of a full-scale rebuild. Now, all this offseason and all last season when we were talking about this impending free agency, you know, we knew who was going to be gone, but one of the things that we also thought we knew was who was not going to be gone and who would still be here for 2018 and who would be the kind of building blocks to try and keep that competitiveness rolling. And it was, you know, Alex Gordon, obviously, Ian Kennedy, who decided not to opt out of his contract, Salvador Perez, who signed for quite a while, you know, Kelvin Herrera was going to be here, Joaquin Soria, and Danny Duffy. You know, those were the big kind of major pieces, the big contract signings, the big ones that the big parts of the team of the organization that had helped win a title, with the exception of Ian Kennedy, as he wasn't a part of the title winning team. But so those are the pieces that we thought we knew were going to be here. But now all this stuff's coming out and everybody's on the table, and it's like, okay, well, who would they really trade though from that crew? And then today, right before we started coming on, all of a sudden, we start to get some news about Danny Duffy possibly being in some talks for a possible trade. I mean, this is one of those things that kind of blows your hair back a little bit. At least it did for mine. I mean, Duffy, he of the Baramiel Royal fame, the guy that they signed last year to 5-year, $80 million contract. What was the final? It was 5-year, $80 million, is that right?
The full contract was 5 years and $65 million. Took a pay cut last year to help him on the payroll, and then it was backloaded a bit.
Still team friendly.
I mean, there's 4 years and $60 million more left. So it's a nice deal.
Very much so. And, you know, the hometown discount was part of it, that he wanted to stay in Kansas City. And he was not shy about that. And so what's been most interesting about this business is, you know, okay, you hear kind of rumors, and maybe someone says, hey, we'd like to, you know, is Danny Duffy available? And maybe Dayton Moore was like, well, let me see what you would give, you know, that type of a thing where it's not really, the deal's not really on the table, but you know, if you blow me away, then sure, everybody can be got, if you will. But the rumors just kind of picked up steam in the last few hours. And then all of a sudden, Danny Duffy gets wind of these rumors, apparently. He's on Twitter. And, you know, he's had his issues with Twitter in the past, but nothing bad today. But he's been, you know, first thing he tweeted was, "Bury me a Royal." Brings that back up. And then he has like a multi-part tweet. He's talking about how much he loves the city, how much of his life has been in the Kansas City Royals organization, how much he loves being a Royal, loves the area, all this stuff. I mean, he's talking about how much he loves the Plaza and Overland Park. I mean, just all these things.
Nobody loves Overland Park.
Nobody loves
Overland Park. We just lost Overland Park.
No more listeners from Overland Park.
Damn. Weird.
I mean, all this stuff, this is in the last few hours. And it's crazy because all the rumors started heating up and we're talking in the Slack chat, like, oh my God, are they actually close to a deal on this? Where's this all coming from? Because there had been, you know, just kind of whispers earlier in the week, and we were all like, no, there's no way DM's trading Danny Duffy, you know, of all players. Duffy and even of those six that I mentioned, Duffy and Perez were the two, even on a different level from that, just completely untouchable, it seemed. And now all these rumors, here we are, and Duffy, you know, I don't imagine Duffy is involved in any way in any of these negotiations. So I don't think he has any additional inside info. He might just be getting emotional because some of the rumors are starting to pick up about him, which I can understand.
And that's just who he is, too. He's probably getting a lot of people tweeting his way, too, just because they can see the same stuff that we do.
Yeah. So, I mean, this whole thing has just kind of been a shocker to me. I did not anticipate or expect or even think that Danny Duffy would be at the center of kind of the Royals trade rumors. But, you know, if you're going to rebuild a young, team-controlled, essentially cheap in this day and age of baseball, left-handed pitcher who has some warts in terms of injury history, lack of innings, but very good talent, and still room to grow even further.
Mm-hmm.
Is. So, you know, if he were to reach his full potential, then you're talking about a very, very good ace-caliber pitcher. You know, that's the guy that you're going to trade. That's, you know, he and Salvador Perez are the two that are probably going to fetch you the most in terms of a prospect haul. So, you know, while I never expected Duffy to be on the block, if you were going to make a trade, if you were going full-scale rebuild, he's probably where you start. So it makes sense, but at the same time, it's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's conflicted. I don't know how to feel about this.
Yeah, it's definitely a head and heart kind of battle because, you know, Duffy of anybody else, I mean, from just even the beginning, you know, a guy who was considered a solid draft pick, but stepped away in 2010, developed into one of their top prospects, came up in 2011, you know, was one of that first wave, one of the top nine of the top 100 overall prospects. He was, you know, part of that group, and he's been a Royal. He said on Twitter, he's been a Royal a third of his life. You know, that's just he's basically his entire adult life. He's been a Royal. And to go through what he's gone through personally, professionally, and winning a World Series, and then also seeing his guys, his friends walk away now, or we assume they're all going to go away. I don't assume any of those guys are going to return to Kansas City. He's probably feeling something pretty deep right now, and it's tough as a fan to watch that and know that, you know, I like Danny Duffy a lot. He's one of my favorite Royals probably ever. He's had his stuff off the field and some issues, you know, with on the field with, you know, consistent performance. But, you know, it's hard to not like the guy. And you to get to that point and have control of Duffy through 2021, it's the ultimate choice because he does have the most value right now. As, like you said, someone who has a lot of upside still, but is on a really pretty affordable relative to most kind of deal. I mean, the max he'll make in any given year is $15.5 million. That's not too bad, especially if you're talking, even if he's only like a number three or number four guy. I mean, like we've said before, if the Royals can pay Ian Kennedy for what he's given them, why couldn't you take that from Danny Duffy? It's you know, it's about the same money. It's just about performance and upside and everything. So he's drawing the most interest. The Cubs in particular have been the name that comes up most often, but I think the Yankees have popped up. Even everybody from like Rosenthal and John Heyman and Jeffrey Flanagan and you know, even other national guys have mentioned that Duffy's drawing the most trade interest, and with good reason. So if you were going to go full rebuild, that's the guy you got to move. I mean, he's going to give you the most prospect return, but at the same time, you have to weigh it against, you know, if the Royals have said earlier in the offseason they feel like they have a 3-year rebuild happening, well, Duffy could still be a part of that. There's nothing also that limits them from re-signing him to another extension if he's stuck around. So it's not like he's, you know, like the only choice is to trade him. If they feel like they have that actual true 3 years to kind of regroup, Duffy would still be a part of that. You know, Sal Perez would still be a part of that. So it's one of those things where, you know, if they are really willing to take a deal that blows them away, they can't really be thinking that 3 years is their window. You know, if they're thinking it's more like 5, because again, they don't have top shelf prospects right now, and you know, you're asking a lot of people to have career breakouts if they're going to be like big parts of this team that draw them to contention. You know, you're basically looking at, you have to rebuild it somehow, and you know, it might be more like 5 or 6 years. So if that means that Duffy gives you some guy in Double A who will be ready to jump into the majors and be a star for you in 2020, well, then that might be what you have to do, especially if it brings you somebody else. You know, I think we came into the offseason kind of expecting guys like Herrera. I mean, the Royals traded Wade Davis last year, and it was basically a foregone conclusion. So if they could trade him, they could definitely feel like they can trade Herrera. Joaquin Soria has one more year on his deal. Could easily see him get traded. Jason Hamill's drawn some interest. So those kind of guys who only have one more year, and, you know, they're all, you know, Herrera's probably going to be about $8 million. Soria and Hamill are both $9 million. Those are obvious guys that you could trade, and maybe you get a pretty good return. But someone like Duffy is where you would get that big kind of, I wouldn't say Greinke type prospect package, but Duffy does have 2 more years of control, even if he doesn't have a Cy Young behind him. So you could see maybe 80% of a Greinke return for him. So I see how it makes sense logically, but it, of all the people you could trade on this team right now, Duffy and Sal Perez would be the toughest for the Royals themselves, but also for the fans. It's just like overall, like, I don't think anybody, I think everybody is begrudgingly accepting that it's the right idea, but nobody really wants it to happen that badly.
Yeah, it's, 'cause you know, it's one thing for Duffy to tweet the Baramia Royal stuff, but I mean, the fans really latched onto that and loved it, you know, and that was one of the ways that he really endeared himself to the fans. Mm-hmm. And they, and rightfully so, you know, and what, you know, you kind of talked about with Duffy, you know, I think one of the things that I always think of is he's so genuine, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve. He doesn't always say the right things, but that's kind of endearing about him, you know, because you know it's coming from the heart. And that type of attitude that players have really resonates with fans a lot. And especially in the case of Danny Duffy, it's definitely resonated a lot with the fans here in Kansas City. So it would definitely be really, really tough for a lot of fans, you know, these two podcast hosts included, to see him as someone who would leave, and or not, I shouldn't say leave because it wouldn't be his choice, but see as someone who would be sent packing by the front office. You know, that would definitely suck. You know, him and Salvi would be, you know, I'm full on with you on that those would be by far the two hardest to see them go, you know, and because it's especially, it's only one thing when someone's a free agent, you know, it's their time, you know, the Royals just can't afford it, that type of a thing. You can, you can convince yourself that that's okay to lose those players. But, you know, when the team you love trades one of the players you love on that team, man, it just becomes, that's just one of those really tough things. So
I just remember 1991 around this time. I just remember this evening because I was walking downstairs in my bedroom. I'm 11 years old, and the TV was still on. I think I went up to get food, or I don't. Doesn't matter. Not important. But as soon as I get down there, I hear the report from the guy on the news that the Royals traded Brett Saberhagen, and it's just like man, like what? Like what did they? Why did they do that? And you know, at the time, it was kind of crushing. Like Brett Saberhagen wasn't like my favorite Royal. That was always George Brett, and I always liked Jeff Montgomery from the pitching side a little bit more. And maybe even Tom Gordon to an extent, but like Saberhagen was like undeniably their best pitcher. You know, two Cy Young awards, World Series MVP, through no hitter. I mean, just he was the guy. And to see that he was going to be traded, you know, it was tough. You know, looking back on it, I guess I see what the Royals were doing because they had some pitching depth and they felt like they could add. Some major league hitters. I mean, they got Greg Jeffries, who was like an uber prospect back in the day, and Kevin Reynolds, who had, you know, 25, 30 home run power. Nobody actually did much, you know. So that makes it even more painful in hindsight because Jeffries had his best season the year after because the Royals, they had him in 92, but they traded him to the Cardinals, and he hit like 350 for the Cardinals. I was like, God dang it, that just sucks. So...
Yes.
And they got Felix Jose, who was perpetually injured, and it's a whole thing. And McReynolds was never any good. They traded him for Vince Coleman, and Coleman was okay, but not that good. And Keith Miller was never any good. So, you know, it's in that kind of realm of just utter disappointment because someone you never thought would get traded away could get traded away. And, you know, maybe that won't happen. You know, it just may be that the Royals don't get bowled over. They're under no real pressure to really deal him, especially when they have other guys that they can move. They can be patient to wait out the right move. They can see where they're at in July and trade him then and see if they can get something like what the White Sox got for Jose Quintana. You know, it might be something there where you can leverage somebody who's really desperate to get that number two, number three guy in the rotation. Maybe that works out better. It's not any easier then, but it at least gives the Royals a chance to kind of continue to evaluate. So, I mean, you know, most of the time their biggest trades have happened just after the winter meetings. So, you know, we'll check back in a week and see how things are.
They kind of lay the groundwork at the winter meetings and then
boom,
it takes off after that.
James Shields, Zach Greinke, those were a week after the winter meetings. Wade Davis had been kind of brewing up to that point and happened during the meetings. But, you know, Duffy's tough to move. The other guys I think are pretty fair game. I like Herrera, but it's not going to hurt me too much to see him leave. Still like Soria a bit, but you know, same thing. And Hamill,
we've seen him leave once,
right?
So.
Right. It's we can deal with this. But Duffy would just be tough, and those are kind of the guys that are getting the most kind of steam on them right now. Is you know Duffy in particular, but. Herrera and Soria have a little bit of attention on them, and Whit Merrifield is someone I think if the Royals, it's another thing where they'd have to get bowled over, but I think they'd probably be selling him at peak value. I don't know. It's a weird moment right now, and I don't know what's going to, like, trigger everything. I think once they start trading one guy, you're going to see a lot of them go quick. I don't know who they might be, but I could definitely see the Royals becoming pretty active once they actually get started. And if Duffy gets swept up in that, then, you know, it's going to be a difficult time. And there's, you know, it's going to be tough for the organization, too, because, I mean, they've seen this guy bounce back from some tough moments, and he's come out as a part of a two pennant winning teams in a world championship, and they saw him finally develop into that kind of leader and staff leader that they always thought he could be. And so, you know, for a team like the Royals, which is probably more sentimental than any other team, it'd be a difficult decision. I don't envy Dayton Moore for having to make it.
No, definitely not. So, And just distress. As of now, they're just rumors, and I'm sure there have been talks. But we don't know how serious they are. Again, you know, like I was saying, kind of at the beginning of this, it could just be something where, you know, I think the temptation is to feel like, oh, Danny Duffy has been discussed as a trade rumor. Oh, well, that means Dayton Moore is calling and saying, will you take Danny Duffy? You know, I want to get rid of him. And that's, you know, I highly doubt that that's what's happening. But, you know, it's
like
it's
an inbound
easy
call center. It's like, yeah, if you call us, we will listen. But
exactly.
They may not necessarily be shopping him.
Yeah, I mean, it's... you know, it's easy to fall into that trap of that's what's happening, and you know, oh, the Royals just don't like Danny Duffy, they don't want Danny Duffy anymore, and I don't think any of that's the case, but I mean, the position the Royals are in now, you know, it's not Dayton Moore's job to make sure that, you know, I mean, it is to make sure that Danny Duffy is happy, but in the sense that, you know, doing what's best for the organization comes first. Even though Dayton Moore doesn't always seem to think that way, and that's part of a lot of the success that he's had. But you know, his job is to make this team compete. And if trading Danny Duffy, you know, and trying to bring another World Series back to Kansas City, and if trading Danny Duffy is the first and best step to get back to that place, then you know that may be something that he has to do, and it would suck, but
yeah.
You know, it's like you said, it's a very unfortunate position for him to be in when your best trade chip is a guy. And you know, I think it feels a little bit even more so than maybe normal, just because of everything that Danny Duffy has been through with the organization. You know, talking about leaving sport, the like you were talking about when you started about this topic, you know, he left in 2010 and then he came back and the Royals, you know, helped him through all his issues and stood by him and got him to where he is today and everything, you know. I mean, that means a lot to the player, and it means a lot to the organization too, that you know, it's a lot of time and effort and money put into helping him out. And you know, so certainly from a fan standpoint, just, you know, tangentially knowing what all happened and what all occurred, it still feels like, you know, oh, we've been through so much together, you can't leave now, that type of a deal. And I'm sure that Danny Duffy and the Royals feel the same way. So if they did have to part, it's what they, you know, it's what Dayton Moore feels like is the best decision, and that's fine, but it's still going to sting a little bit if it does happen.
Yeah. I mean, I saw someone on Twitter said, hey, or I think it was like Seinfeld, they were referencing Seinfeld. It's like, you're rooting for laundry. And it's like, well, yeah, you are. But at the same time, you're, you know, you get connected to these guys. I mean,
that's an oversimplification of, you know,
of the bit.
Yeah, of what fandom is about.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, it would be tough. It would be really tough. But
well, just as we described Dayton Moore having to deal with players that he cares about and that, you know, he's stuck with and all that kind of stuff versus, excuse me, versus what's best for the organization. You know, it's a similar deal with, you know, fans trying to balance, okay, love for the area and for the team and for Kansas City versus love for a lot of these players, you know, like, you know, I'm always going to be Royals first, but I love Lorenzo Cain, maybe my favorite Royals player of all time. Wherever he goes, as long as it doesn't interfere with the Royals being good, I'm going to root for him to be successful because I like him as a person, as a player, everything. So, you know, there's still an attachment there. So, you know, I get it. It's funny. It's just a joke talking about the rooting for laundry type of thing. But, you know, I do feel it's somewhat of an oversimplification of you know, what we are as fans and how we get attached to players and teams and stuff. So,
yeah, and especially when it's a group that got you to a World Series and won one. It's like, you know, I mean, I remember when Mike Sweeney came back and there was a lot of applause for him, even though he's on another team, and Billy Butler as well. You know, just Gerard
Dyson.
And then you look at Gerard Dyson and Holland and people still cheer for Wade Davis, even though he was in a pretty rough trade last year. It's just, you can't help but can remain attached to those guys because, so many fandoms were just, exploded because of 2015. And it's tough to shake it. So if they do trade Duffy, if they trade any of them, it's going to be rough. But, I mean, if they trade Duffy, it's just going to be oh, man. It's the double whammy of knowing that, yes, the full rebuild is going, and you've also lost one of your favorites. It's that's a bummer. So you hope they get, a pretty good haul out of it.
Yeah, and that's the final piece we haven't even discussed of what they would get. And then
I have lordly no
you've
idea.
Seen, you've seen, I don't either, but either way, we've seen trades blow up in the past. Even when we thought the Royals had got a good return on a trade, I'm not just talking about Dayton Moore, just Royals throughout history, whether it's the Brett Saberhagen trade or whether it's, whether it's any of the Johnny Damon or Carlos Beltran or any of those trades, those are the ones we've seen them that have just not worked out that well before. So that's the other piece too. I mean, that's your worst case scenario there, is that you trade Duffy hoping for a rebuild and that the prospects that you get in for him don't pan out. He goes on to have lots of success. And then you're just kind of stuck. It's this sucks.
Yeah.
We've been there before too many times.
Yeah. And that's the kind of the worst nightmare of it. So I don't know what they would get. I mean, I think they'd expect to get, a good pitcher. I think they'd try to get a top 10, a team's top 10 kind of hitter kind of thing. And then you kind of fill in from there. But I don't know. I'm terrible at filling in those kind of trades. If it was the Cubs, I think there are a couple names you could probably point to, but I don't know. A lot of it really is difficult because you're looking again at this window, and it's anybody who's in the big leagues now, say a Kyle Schwarber or something, if they were to do that, I don't think that's even in the realm of possibilities, but if they were to do something like that, he's a guy with a couple of years of service time already, so it's not really that much of a benefit to be trading a guy who has 4 years of service time or 4 years on a contract for a guy who still has 5 years of team control. If your window is, that extra year doesn't really match up that well. So I can't imagine they would be trading him for anybody who was currently in the big leagues, unless it was somebody who played a week last year, who's ready, but that the Royals would probably, mess around with their service time and keep him in AAA just to make sure they can get a little extra service time out of him. Just look like Eric Hosmer, where, hey, you just wait a couple weeks and then bring him up and you get, six and 80%, six full seasons and 80% of one. It's you can do that. So I can't imagine they would trade for anybody that they don't think is going to be right in the middle of that. If they think it's 3 years, I think you kind of got to figure that it's somebody who they think is going to be just hitting their stride. I mean, if you think about it with the Royals, in 2011, they started the year with 1 million prospects in the top 100 overall. That didn't even include Kelvin Herrera or Yordano Ventura or Sal Perez or Greg Holland. Those guys were just bonus prospects on top of Hosmer, Moustakas, and Odorizzi. And Lorenzo Cain was in the organization. He wasn't included in that.
Mm-hmm.
So they had just so much young talent then, and it still took them until 2014 to get it together.
Yeah.
So were the Royals now with less upper-level talent. In 2011, it was Hosmer and Moustakas had been in AAA, and the other guys had been in AA and close to AAA, definitely ready for it. It was, those guys aren't there now. And you've got to basically trade to get a whole bunch of those guys. And even then maybe you're in your three-year window, but it's just tough. It's tough. And if Duffy's the guy that they got to trade to bring in four or five of those guys, maybe that's too many. But three solid prospects, the Royals would probably do it. because I don't, I can't imagine if you're looking at guys who have contracts, even like Whit Merrifield, he's going to be with the team through 2022, and same with Scott Alexander. It's like if you're willing to listen on those guys, you know, you probably don't see them as part of the next contending window, because why would you trade them otherwise? So it just tells me that the 3 years that they might have referenced in November is probably not what they're really thinking internally. So that's sobering. unless they get a lot of breakouts, like everybody hits 300,
yeah,
and everybody throws 200 innings, and they're really good. So
back to 2012, Ned Yost, when everyone's hitting 30 home runs.
Yeah.
Everyone's got that kind of power.
You went 30 bombs, you're hitting 30 bombs.
If seven of the nine Royals hitters end up with 30-plus home runs, then I think they'll be okay. But that's not going to happen.
Shot, but yeah, it's, yeah, not probably something. I wouldn't make a bet on that.
No, certainly not. So on that somber note,
yeah.
I think we'll leave. See, that's kind of the bulk of the news that's been coming down as far as, you know, where the Royals are at and then where baseball is at. So now that Stanton trade is done, Ohtani has been signed, we're at the winter meetings, you know, there's been some rumors. It feels like it's been slower. I haven't been paying as much attention to Twitter as I normally do around this time of year. So maybe I'm just missing some of it, but it doesn't feel like it's been quite as much of a bum rush of information as there has been in the past. And who knows? Who knows what that means? But
next week might be crazy. Who knows?
Exactly, yeah. So I'm sure there'll be some moves. Whether it's a ton of them or not, there's definitely going to be some moves we'll talk about next week. And who knows? Maybe the Royals will make one. I didn't think so a week ago, but now you never know. And like you said, I definitely agree with your point that, you know, if one of them goes, the rest are sure to follow and probably quick. So if it happens, it could be something where it's like, oh, man, I didn't even think the Royals were going to rebuild. And it's like, well, you know, see you in 2020, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of what it comes down to. It's just like, well,
yeah.
It's
we'll see what happens, but either way, we'll be here. We'll be talking about it all. So hopefully something happens with the Royals. That'll be fun. And hopefully it doesn't involve losing Danny Duffy. But we'll see, I guess.
I'm checking Twitter right now, and as of right now, nobody's been traded. So
nobody's been traded. Okay.
So we're still good.
10 minutes from now, somebody will be traded. You can
probably
bank
it. Yeah.
Bank it.
I would bet on that, yes.
Yes. But so if it happens 10 minutes from now, then unfortunately we'll have to wait till next week. But any time between now and then,
right.
Something happens, we'll be there to talk about it. And because we will be back next week, we'll have to talk. I don't know if we'll be able to do another. We might take a show off for around the Christmas break or so. So we'll kind of
see. We'll play it by ear.
Indeed. So, but we'll be back next week talking about the end of the winter meetings and any big deals that have happened from now till then. So until then, be sure to visit our sponsors. If you're going to Westport, go to Kelly's Westport Inn, of course. Always a great time. Couldn't do the show without them. Kelly's is definitely near and dear to our hearts here at the Kansas City Baseball Vault. So if you're home for the holidays or if you live here anyway and you just got family in town or whatever, you want to go have a good time, take them down to Kelly's. Always a good time, always, especially this time of year. Even though it's cold, you know, sometimes it because it's cold, I think everyone goes out. That goes out. Everyone gets packed in, and everyone's having a good time in the bars and everything else. So, definitely go check out Kelly's. Have a good time. But of course, as always, remind you to be responsible with your good time. And if you're hankering for more Royals news before our next show, definitely bpkansascity.com. Wonderful. All the wonderful writers we have there pumping out content daily, getting it out there for you. And I always like this time of year because it really kind of with no actual baseball to cover, it gives a little bit more freedom for the staff to kind of break out and do some more interesting topics. So that's always a good thing that I enjoy. So definitely be sure to go and visit BP Kansas City. We've got Craig Brown has just pulled it up here to see what's on our front page. We got Craig Brown talking about using the R word, rebuild, talking about that. David Leskey's got a similar article talking about some of the Danny Duffy rumors. So definitely, if you want to read, hear a little bit more about that, and some of their thoughts, go check out what they have. Always good stuff. And of course, continuing throughout the season. Throughout the off season, with plenty of Royals content. So be sure to visit them and Kelly's, and then come back next week and listen to our show. So until then,
where we talk about the seven trades that happen in about five minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. We love you all. Couldn't do it without you, the listeners. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll see you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.